Yes, sir. Dieter and Hutch talking through the second half of preseason football like the absolute degenerate sickos that we are. Thank you to anyone and everyone who is joining us, which is no one thus far, but they'll be here soon, Jake, I promise.
That's right.
We're going to talk a little bit about first half of Raiders and 49ers. Wow. What a night. What a Friday. I mean, if you could make plans in any direction, I think you say, I want to watch some preseason football. That's it. I'll give them this. Brock Purdy looked great. I really liked what I saw from Brock Purdy. I know that the stat line will say no touchdowns and an interception. I don't put that interception on him.
No, Debo looked like he was phoning it in a little bit, which, to be honest,
don't blame him.
Probably do.
Don't blame him at all. I'd phone in as well. I can't believe they're playing him. But yeah, listen, that is what you wanted to see from a first team offense. Once they got in the end zone the first time, I was content with how it had gone. They continued to play a little bit more. Not sure if that did anything for me. Did it do anything for you?
I will say no. I mean, the first team offense, I think the most notable thing outside of Purdy, the run blocking. And Jordan Mason, like an absolute bull. Also looking stellar is Isaac Arendo, who's still out there, still chugging.
He should be. You know, frankly, the second half of preseason, I'm not somebody, I mean, I'm barely watching. You can see where we're at in the game with NFL Jesus there in the middle. Shouts to those who know. But Arendo is the second coming of Raheem Mostert. I mean, except he's bigger. Straight line speed.
He moves like him.
He's upright runner. I'm a big fan of Isaac Arendo conceptually. And I think that we could see in practice what it could look like down the line. I want to be clear about this from the jump. The Raiders suck with their first team. So I don't know what the fuck a third team is going to do out there.
Yeah.
But Mason and Arendo looked fantastic. I thought Purdy looked really, really good. That throw he had to Kittle was special. Kind of stupid, but special. I thought even better than that was his throw on the run to the right that hit Chris Conley.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of side. I mean, if Caleb Williams made that throw, which, by the way, he has in preseason, but if Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick, made that throw in a game, it'd be all over Twitter and Instagram and YouTube. Like, oh, the second, Lisan Al-Gaib. And Brock Purdy just out here making that throw. And I don't even think that the NFL or the 49ers reposted it. It's now just become commonplace. I'm not going to start some Brock Purdy disrespect discourse, but the dude is really, really fun to watch. And I feel bad for people who don't watch him and just think that he's some game manager, because frankly, no games are being managed with Brock. He is out there slanging that thing, and it is fun as fuck.
I think anybody who actually had to watch Jimmy play, and then you go from watching Jimmy to Brock, it's not even like, it's like, you know what you're seeing. Right. And I think the 49ers didn't really need to like see Purdy out there. I think he wanted the reps, which is fair. But I think
I needed to see it, Jake. I needed to see him play good quarterback. Like, frankly,
you needed a reminder of like, oh yeah, this is what he can do out there. And what I got reminded of, and we both had the same reaction. We're like, oh, that's vintage Russell Wilson. The ball that shouldn't be thrown, that's perfectly placed, that gets in there, the literal last second you could possibly have of spinning out of the pocket, throwing on the run, just making magic stuff happen. His pocket presence and that short area quickness, it just gives him so much flexibility to be like, whoop. And there's nothing you can do as a defender to prepare for that. So that was good to see Mason again. Pooney's still looking solid.
I really liked the run blocking today, and shouts to Nick Sakelj. We've given Nick Sakelj plenty of gruff on this channel, and listen, I haven't gone in and really dug deep. I didn't notice him breaking down in any pass coverage. I thought he was really, really good as a run blocker, both at guard and at center. So I think Nick Sakelj is on this team. I think that's really good tape. They clearly have confidence in him. And I think today, for the first time, you can make the argument that they're not completely unfounded in having some confidence in that guy. I think we should also mention Jacob Cowing. Now, he had a catch in the second half. I don't give a hoot about that. We know what he can do on that side of the ball. And I think that the hype might be pushing a little bit too much, but midway through the season, he could be a player for this team. Like, I think there's plenty of reasons. I'm not saying don't get excited. I'm saying maybe let's not extrapolate it to where it's already been extrapolated to. But as a punt returner, he looks like he has a lot of promise. And I know that the numbers today don't necessarily, you look at him and you go, didn't he have a good game punt returning? Their coverage teams are shit, both in return coverage. I mean, everything is bad outside of the returners. Yeah. It's like Richard Hightower is running a shadow government from Chicago or something. It's tough to watch in that regard, but Cowing and Garendo, they got their returners covered, man. They are set at that position, not just for this year, but for years to come.
Two things. They just tried to run just like a quarterback power, I think, quarterback sweep with Dobbs, and he got murdered. I think Cowing might have missed his block. That said, he has actually looked like a good blocker for a guy who's smaller than I am.
Cowing. The Nuge is in, just blocking like a motherfucker.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
Love the Nuge.
Here's the thing about Cowing.
Yeah.
They don't have Ayuk. They don't have Pearsall on the field. He actually looks like a guy who can play wide receiver and has like the ability to take the top off the defense. He's got enough speed where like Conley like doesn't really have speed, but like he can run routes and he's crafty and he's got size.
Yeah.
Cowing just like separates and can make plays.
He is everything Ronnie Bell was promised to be. Like, there's a lot of similarities in their game, and you might be like, don't put that on him. Like, Ronnie Bell is a pretty good route runner, and Ronnie Bell does find a way to get open. The problem is that Ronnie Bell then doesn't catch the fucking football, like, ever. It's honestly quite depressing to watch. Whereas Cowing not only catches it, but then gets yards after the catch, and he looks like a really good draft pick. And again, it wouldn't shock me at all if called into service, whether that be in week one because of the 49ers wide receiver situation with, as you just mentioned, Pearsall out and Ayuk, who apparently traveled with the team. So weird.
I saw the everything's video of him walking
weird. Sign the fucking contract. Or not. Play on the fifth year option. I don't give a fuck. Get to work. I don't care anymore. I'm so over it. I do. Can I get this point in on Ayuk? Because
get it off.
How many goddamn meetings have they had? Not with his agent, but with Brandon. Someone brought this up to me today. Like, why do they keep meeting with the player? That's so weird. I can't think of another situation like that where it's just gotten into a strange emotional zone where Brandon Ayuk can't. I told Larry Kruger this last night on the stream. Like, I've always felt like this was not suited for Brandon Ayuk, this whole wide receiver diva thing. I've been on that for months, that he's, and again, I don't mean this to denigrate him, or I mean this in a positive way. We're all different. Right. Everyone's a snowflake, whatever. But like, he's a sensitive guy. He's not an extroverted dude. I think he feels a little bit, you know, more than the prototypical football player does. I think that there's a sensitivity to how he is talked about in the media, which I know for a fact. There's a sensitivity to how he's talked about on social media. I know that for a fact. And he clearly wants respect, not just in money form, but also in a team saying, we really want you. We really value you. By putting a number on it, in this contract negotiation, it creates a conflict where the 49ers say, we really want to keep you, but we don't think you're as good as you think you are. And we don't think you're as good as the market says you are. And I think that that really hurts Brandon. And it creates this conflict that I don't know how they get out of, because they haven't gotten out of it for now months, where Brandon does want to be here. He does want to win. He does want to stay with this team, but he also wants a love that they cannot provide him. It's like, this is not normal contract negotiation stuff. No. And again, I think they've met more, Brandon Ayuk and John Lynch. They called John Lynch in from vacation to meet with Brandon Ayuk. I think they've met more than the United States cabinet has over the last 6 months. Like, legitimately. I Brandon Ayuk sees John Lynch more than I see my wife. Like, it is so weird and so strange. And I think that at a certain point, we have to acknowledge that and understand that the context that's creating that environment is an abnormality with the player. And again, it's not to say that it's anything good or bad. It's just to say this guy should have handed it off to his agent. You talk to my agent. He represents my interests. I'm going to stay out of this thing because it's messy and it might be mean. And you see this all the time in baseball with those arbitration meetings, and it gets contentious and things that are said that can't be unsaid. And Brandon just keeps interjecting himself into this, looking for that love that he's never going to get, because John Lynch is not his dad. John Lynch is not his mom. John Lynch is not a member of his family. He's not a friend. He's there to do a job. And just sign a fucking contract or don't. Just show up to work or don't. But I need resolution with this thing, because it's so it's abnormal, Jake. We've known this forever, but it's like really been powered home with some of the conversations I've had recently.
It's exhausting. It's hard to even like formulate a new take, because you're just like, both sides are like doing this like panic dance thing, and
he's with the team. What the fuck? Like, it's so... Respect to Trent Williams, where he's like, when you have my money, give me a call.
Right. I just think... I don't understand...
You don't have to have a take, buddy.
I don't have a take other than that it's exhausting and it's sad. That's my take.
It is
sad. This whole thing is sad because it really does feel like it comes from a place of him wanting to be recognized. Right. Yeah. And it feels like that's manifested and metastasized in this very bizarre way, where it's like, I don't want to just be highly paid. I need to be like in this category, because I'm not getting that from you.
Yeah.
And their side is that the 49ers are trying to win this deal rather than get it done, which they kind of always do.
Right.
And
by the way, he had to know that going in. You talk to Deebo, you talk to George Kittle, you talk to Fred Warner, you talk to Nick Bosa. I mean, what did George Kittle compare it to? I could have
told him how it would go.
Right. Like, there's a pretty, it's bog standard how this goes. The Niners are fuckers when it comes to negotiating contracts. And ultimately, you get paid, right? At the end, you're going to be a very, very rich man. Now, you might not be as rich as you wanted to be, but you're going to be a very, very rich man. And if it's just about the money, which it isn't, he would be a New England Patriot and he'd get so much recognition there, but it'd be empty calories. And it's like, dude, you can't have it every way you want it. You can't be on the winning team with all the highly paid players, where you're also considered now the highest paid player and the best player, and you're winning. And you get, you know, everything works out for you. You're going to have to make some sacrifices here if you want it to work on this side.
Also,
and
the sacrifice is what?
You know? Easy for us to say. I mean, I get it. It's a couple million dollars. We'll take it. And then, then the biggest loser argument of all time, which is like, what about the tax dollars, comes into play.
I'm just saying, at a certain point, pounding home. You get to, I think the 49ers should really set a deadline and say, all right, this is our cutoff date and we will Tuesday not negotiate.
Tuesday would be perfect for that. Hey, roster.
Yeah.
Are you in or are you out?
We have made one final offer. We've upped it. Here's what it is. Take it or leave it.
Yep.
And if you're Ayuk, take it. It's going to be
or
good.
Or not. You can bet on yourself. Like, legitimately.
Yeah.
More power to them, because right now the only options that are available, and I promise we're going to pivot off of this, but I do feel like there's something to talk about here outside of what we've been sort of bloviating about, and the fact that he's on the team plane and he's hanging out at work, even though he's not at work. And it's just so strange. But if he wants to bet on himself, that's fine, because right now the 49ers can only get a second and a third round pick from Pittsburgh according to what I guess everyone's saying at this point. I don't know how good rumors are these days, but there are pretty standard rumors that even find their way to me. And second and third is the going rate right now for Brandon Ayuk from the Pittsburgh Steelers. That does nothing for anybody with the San Francisco 49ers. They were asking for 2 first-round picks this past offseason before the draft. The Steelers offered them 1 and a couple other picks and a player, I think it was Firemuth, and the Niners are like, no, they overplayed their hand. And then they came out and they said, okay, we want a first or players that can immediately help us. And a couple of teams came through. And here's Amari Cooper in a second, and the Patriots had either Judon or Uche.
Pretty good deals.
And then you go, okay, Brandon, these guys will give you the money you want, and we're going to take a bit of a hit. It's not as good as it would be just having Brandon Ayuk, but like, this is resolution, and we can.
And then you can pivot and go like acquire another receiver if you want.
That's right. We can make this work. I mean, especially the Amari Cooper deal with Cleveland, but he goes, oh, I don't want to go there. Those teams suck, which he's right. But like, also, okay, then what are we going to do about, oh, I want to go to Pittsburgh. Well, Pittsburgh isn't going to throw anything worthwhile in because they don't have that much that's worthwhile. They're certainly not going to give it up because their entire point is trying to take a mediocre team and make it good, as if Brandon Ayuk can do that. That's their prerogative, not mine. And so that it's a second and a third. Well, the 49ers can get a second and a third for Brandon Ayuk at the end of this season. Easy. I don't think he'll ever get a first again, but it would be a second and a third on a guy who's going on to the franchise tag. I don't think they'd have a problem making that deal happen. So why would you take it now, going into a season where you think you can compete for the Super Bowl, right or wrong, but you should think that. Why would you take that now? I have no problem with Brandon Ayuk playing on a fifth-year option. No problem at all. Be a little weird, but ultimately we just all get over it because everybody's playing on a one-year deal in the NFL, baby.
Not for long.
Not for long.
I heard Lo Neal say that on the pregame broadcast. I almost crossed off my NFL bingo board. Yeah.
To be fair, Lo Neal actually did play in the NFL for a long time, so he's probably the last guy I'd want to hear from that. But he's not wrong. He's not wrong. Okay. So Tuesday would be a good day for the 49ers to say take it or leave it. We need a roster. I'd imagine that this weekend they're going to try to get something done with both Williams and Ayuk, not as if they haven't been trying. Maybe they try a little bit harder with Williams.
Yeah, maybe just try a little bit harder.
Yeah. Preseason's over. We got some time to think about some stuff. They're certainly going to be spending a lot of time over the next couple of days making phone calls to teams around the league, not just to shop guys that they're clearly going to cut, just to see if they can steal a 7th from somebody for a Sammy Womack, something like that, but also, you know, getting a read on guys who might be cut and maybe trying to cut the line with a 6th or a 7th so that they can bring someone in.
They got to get a defensive lineman. I mean, the fact that Floyd and Gross Matos got hurt, regardless, they needed. Listen, yeah. I think you can make a very compelling point for both a nose tackle and a defensive end on this team. Mm-hmm. I'm not even saying a compelling point. They need someone. They have 8 theoretical like defensive linemen, and 2 of them I'm talking about are like Kevin Givens and Robert Beal, who aren't like world beaters. So you're just like, oh, they're
on Beal had the team. A nice game today, which he needed, frankly.
He did. I like Sam Aquanu, but like,
I thought Aquanu looked really good today.
But he looks good.
But you know what we're talking about here, though. Like, Sam Aquanu is not like, somebody who should be counted.
You get a guy who can be in the rotation and you go, oh, he's not going to collapse into himself like a neutron star, right? Yeah. Like, you just need some sort of competence, a body. They have to do something. So I think they're going to go light 8 and then like sneak a roster spot, one.
I think what they could do is they can take as many guys as they want through. And then like an Alex Barrett, like why start treating him with respect now? Like Alex Barrett, you had a really good camp and a couple pretty good preseason games. So you made the roster. Ah, shit. You know, there's this other guy that just got cut that we're going to sign. So sorry there. And also we've now deprived you of your ability to sign with another team and make a 53-man roster. So there's something to be said there. The Niners could be fuckers in that regard too.
Did number 5 just false start? No, just kidding. Sorry. I kind of thought Josh Dobbs.
Bill Binovich out of the game. Kid.
Yeah, that's tough.
What happened?
I don't know, but he just disappeared at one point, and
I just saw him on the sideline.
Yeah, I see him right now. He's looking confused, letting other guys get the reps.
It's like Kyle not calling the game. Bill Vinovich is like, we're going to let the side judge take this.
I know it's probably an injury, but if that's what he did, where he's just like, nah, I'm good. I'm gonna play the first half, get my jogging in, but I'm good. And Tay Martin fumble.
The ultimate power play. Listen, I can watch the second half of this game some other time if something interesting happens.
You're not missing much.
They're keeping two quarterbacks beyond, obviously, Brock Purdy. I think that they showed their hand on who they prefer. I think they're probably right. I don't mind having Josh Dobbs on the team, because if you have a whole week, like if you know Purdy's out, and this is a great point by you last time we talked, like if Purdy's out and you know going into a week Purdy's not going to play, toss Josh Dobbs in there and see if the chaos agent can make something happen for you. Yeah. You have a higher ceiling, lower floor with Dobbs. It is.
Your floor is already low with Allen. I mean, that's the thing. Honestly, going back to the first half, I watched him take like two Jimmy sacks, where Brandon Allen just went, he stepped up, he saw pressure, he stepped up. Yeah. And then instead of like throwing or continuing to step up, he turned around back into the sack.
Yeah.
And then another time he saw one coming from the right tackle and he went, oh no. And then he walked into it again. And I went, that is a chasmic gap from Brock Purdy. And it's a reminder that if he goes down,
yeah,
it's all over.
Right. Yes. That is the Tom Moore school of quarterbacking.
Right.
We don't practice fucked, but, I want to shout to you with the take last time we talked, if you need someone to go in and play a couple series because Brock is in the blue tent, you go with Brandon Allen.
Yeah,
because he'll get him into formation. He might be able to make a throw or two. He'll be able to hand it off to Christian McCaffrey five times in a row without incident. If you put Josh Dobbs in that situation, you might have lost the game by the time Brock Purdy comes back. You might also win it, but it's just not worth the risk in that scenario. But again, if you have a whole week, you're like, well, let's fucking see how this goes. We lose by 50, so be it. But we can also win, which is not really something that I think you can reasonably say with Brandon Allen. Of course, that's not how Kyle will handle it, but that's where it stands. Can we talk about depth tight end, Jake?
Yes, please.
You and I have both been, and I think everybody who's been paying attention have been of the mindset that tight end's pretty much solid, locked up, three jobs, and it's going to be Kittle, obviously, Eric Saubert, who's just a blocking god. And then Braden Willis, who they've given a lot of reps to, and some good, some bad,
like in the playoffs
season, right? Like he's the next guy in. And as of this week, even with not a great week of practice, which I both saw and heard, because at a certain point I'm like, I'm getting nothing out of this.
They had no pads.
I'm not getting on 880 to watch a bunch of guys run around in shorts and no pads. Even with him sort of fading a little bit as of late, I just still thought, well, he's actually kind of an upgrade over Ross Dwelly, because you can reasonably put him in at fullback, H-back stuff. You're feeling okay about it. And then Saubert's in as the Charlie Warner replacement, and you actually can really do some interesting things in two tight end sets. And then they re-sign Logan Thomas, and you're like, what the fuck is up with that? That's weird. And Jake Tongas, who has just been steady and like really clean.
Tongas.
He's been really impressive all camp. And it's one of those things that you just sort of stick in the back of your head because you don't think it matters. But I think it mattered today because he was much, much, much better than Willis, not just as a catcher, but as a blocker too. And that was jarring to see such a contrast at this point in the preseason.
Yeah. You got Kittle and you got Saubert. And then there's Willis, who, dude, him and Latu are just, you know, whiffing on blocks left and right, man.
The Latu blocking is really bad at special teams.
I can't even talk about Latu because
you're anchored. I'll talk.
I watched him in the draft going into the draft. You know how I feel about him.
He was the only tight end that you said was not draftable. You're like, I don't have any beliefs about tight ends in this class other than this guy. Don't draft him. And then they drafted him.
My thing is like let's move on from him. We know, like, sure, he made two catches, like, or three, whatever. Like, don't, like, watch.
Did he break any tackles?
Tim Ryan was getting, like, angry watching him on the broadcast. He was like, you cannot make those mental mistakes. Like, he ran the wrong direction on one play. Moving on from him. Him and Willis as blockers, they're just not, you can't trust them. You really can't. And Tonjes, every time I see him, he's doing the right thing every time. Listen, the ball comes to him, he's catching it every time. Just reliably, not
what
like
a standard.
Not like superb, crazy athleticism. No. Catches it every time, can turn up field a little bit. Not like a crazy athlete, but has a little bit of it. He's got good size. Yeah. He's not the best blocker I've ever seen, but he's like in the right spot and holding up. And
I thought he was stunning today as a blocker.
Oh my God, that was an insane interception by Daryl Luter.
Luter's a good player, man. And they gave Sammy Womack a lot of reps today to say, hey, take the job from Daryl Luter. And boy, howdy, did he ever.
You're going to actually have to watch this one because I'm not sure for anyone when we post this in the morning.
That's a very special play.
Daryl Luter, it was like a fluttering ball to the back corner of the end zone. And Luter just like.
He caught it over the shoulder. He Willie Mays'd it.
That was wild.
That was
incredible.
Play.
So
he's on the roster.
Yeah, we'll get to corner in just a sec, but to close out the tight ends thing, Kittle and Saubert, I think there's a route where like Tonjes is the third. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they keep four, and it's going to be Willis and Tonjes, because I do think there still is upside with Willis, and I think maybe that's something that jolts him. They keep four, and he becomes like
he's not good at special teams either, though. That's another issue.
I know, which is why I think if it was me, I would keep Tonjes as the third and just go with that.
Yeah.
But I kind of think they're going to keep four just for the sake of saying, really, we're going to cut two of our draft picks at tight end. Like, it's not a great look. Not that that's the whole thesis, but like, I still think they see a little bit of upside there. Yeah. Latu's not doing it. Mason Plyne's not doing it. Logan Thomas, you try and get him on the practice squad. I don't really understand resigning him at all.
So strange. So strange.
But that's my view. I just think Tonjes has earned a roster spot.
Yeah.
And no one outside of Saubert has.
Okay, let's talk corner because Luter just had a wonderful interception. And clearly the 49ers, they've seen enough from Luter. Everything that I've heard is that Luter's made this team. And they gave Sam Womack a chance today against third stringers. The Peterman starting at quarterback for the Raiders. Gave him every chance today to go out there and make the team. Right? Go do something special for us. This is a guy who's been counted on in special teams, and this is a guy who has been sort of waiting in the wings as a depth player at corner. And I don't think that he ever wants to see Tyreek McAllister again, because, listen, you can outkick your coverage as a punter. I'm never going to blame a punter for kicking the ball too far, okay?
Yeah.
This is the NFL. Presley Harvin did his job and absolutely kicked the shit out of a ball deep. And Sam Womack was there and didn't do his job. And he lets Tyreek McAllister just run. He just let him run right past it. And because it was such a deep kick and because the punt coverage team isn't organized as well as they should be, he takes it to the house. That's a mistake. I don't know if that was an individually cuttable mistake. But to follow it up with whatever the fuck that was at the beginning of the second half, I don't know how you can put him on the roster now. I just frankly don't. And I hate to hammer on the guy because he's about to lose his gig. I don't feel good about this. But like, okay, so you get beat off the line. It didn't look like it was, it looked like he was mixed up on what coverage he was supposed to be running. And then, okay, you recover. You then immediately interfere, but not interfering enough in order to stop him from making the catch. And then he just turns and runs into the end zone. Like, dude, you're done. You're done. It's over. It's over for you. And it's a good problem to have where a guy like Sammy Womack can just get cut, because that means you got some pretty damn good corners. This is not something that could have happened last year or certainly the years before that. But Sammy Womack's out after today. And that's a pretty significant thing for Sammy Womack, certainly, and for the 49ers. Like, I don't think that they expected it to be this calamitous.
Also, they're trying to get Isaac Arendo killed out there, by the way.
He needs reps. I mean, he legit needs reps. Like, he doesn't practice.
I know he needs reps. I'm just saying they're giving him a lot of reps behind a very bad offensive line.
It wasn't a contact injury. It was a non-contact injury. let the guy that's get some fair. Contact.
And he is
physical. He might be the biggest reps. Guy on the field, by the way.
That's true. At corner, it's like, right, just to like, for all anyone who ends up listening to this in the morning, and there's a Trent Taylor sighting. I almost forgot about him. It's six corners, and it's Ward, Green, Lenore, Yadam, and then you got like two questions, right? You could go Rakusin, Luter, Lucas, Samuel Womack. Those are the four.
You named the first two. The first two made the team. I thought Rakusin was marvelous today. I know that Rakusin, he wasn't perfect, but he made a couple really good plays.
He's a very good corner who has struggled with injuries. Like the 49ers have liked him for a long time. He's just never been healthy, and he's looked good.
He's looked good.
And listen,
he's not gonna stop the run. He's not gonna do a lot of stuff, but he could be a special teams guy and a depth corner. And you can do a whole lot worse if for 2 weeks you have to play Rakusin on the outside when Diamador Lenore slides inside. Yeah. You won't have to, because Renardo Green's gonna take that job. And our man Renardo didn't have the best back-to-back plays today. But he
did make some plays earlier.
He did.
And one of those was like, yeah, they weren't great. They weren't great, but I understood what went wrong. I just think it's got to be Luter over Womack, and then Chase Lucas has shown me very, very little to nothing. So I think that's what you have to do at corner, and if they do anything else, I'd kind of be shocked.
Ronnie Bell and Cam Latu, they're both done. Today was their day to make a team, and I didn't see it. The fact that this was Cam Latu's best NFL game speaks volumes.
It's just when your tight end is out there and every time he's involved, you go, you can't have him on the team. I'm sorry. Yeah.
This is why Kyle can't call plays in the preseason. He feels it too much. He can't do it. Alex Simon, our good friend Alex Simon, with, of course, the question of the day. Live chat, we're gonna be coming to you here. Would they dare go with two punters? No, but I wish they would.
Our guy Nick Wagoner, I tried to like play devil's advocate. I tried, and he was like, "I'm not talking about punting with you." I'm like, "You're not sick enough. You're not sick enough in the head." And I was like, "They should have a punt off." And he's like, "You know, Wisnowski was good last year, and Harvin's been inconsistent." I'm like, "I don't care. I'm seeing a goddamn golden leg out there, and if I don't get to see more of it, I'm gonna lose my mind."
I am watching genius take place on a football field, and you're just gonna cut it. You're going to let the Seahawks or the Rams or the fucking Cardinals get this guy? Seahawks don't need him. They have a great punter.
Camera, slow pan in. If you don't like punting, I don't like you. That's not.
Listen. I'm going to tell you right now, there is not a single 49ers piece of content, creator, whatever the fuck you call this weird ecosystem we're in right now. But there is nobody, zoom in, there is nobody who is going to talk more special teams than Jake and me, okay? We're going to be breaking down lines, and we're going to be talking special teams because we have to develop a niche really fast or this all goes bunk.
That's right. Listen, I'm just saying, when you see a guy hit a goddamn missile off his foot, don't you feel a little something in your plums?
Listen, I covered Conference USA football for a couple of years. Trust me.
Another punt.
I know punting. Did our man just boot the shit out of one?
Dropped him at the 11, I think.
Oh, 12. What a beautiful. You should keep two. Let's just dive in on special teams. I kind of like this Moody squib kick thing they got going on.
Oh, yeah.
He's like that really good at that.
Nice.
Yeah. He's got that little punch shot. I can get into it. It's like he's playing a Lynx course, keeping it low, out of the wind.
Yeah. Yeah, listen. I think that's the way to go. I saw Harrison Butker. I guess I shouldn't mention his name because he's not well. But he did have a sick kick. He's a very good kicker. He's just a delusional individual.
Hey, we all have our absolute batshit political beliefs.
Right. But he did one that like curved. That was pretty sweet. Right before. That was like impossible to return. Moody can get a little bit of curve on that and drop it in there. Mm-hmm. Now we're cooking.
Yeah, this is Rob Gostkowski stuff, right? Remember when Bill Belichick, the special teams goat, just had Gostkowski like pin coffin corner for years, multiple years. He's like, you can't get it out of the end zone. You better be accurate as fuck. And then it actually did totally screw with his ability to make field goals, but that's neither here nor there. It's the second half of the third preseason game, and we got 16 days until the season opener. There's only so much we can do here. Anything shock you in this game? Anything stun you? I mean, I think the Tonjes thing with Willis is the biggest revelation, if I could call it that, from today. I think that's the only fundamental shift.
I mean, I wasn't shocked, but Jordan Mason, like on that one catch where he like cut up field, like I knew he had like a tiny bit of wiggle.
Yeah.
But like that cut was impressive.
Are we talking about drafting Jordan Mason in fantasy football this year just in case? Are we at that point? Are we that crazy?
Depends what kind of league we're talking.
Well, let's talk a standard 12 team. Let's go super flex 15 rounds, something like that.
No.
Okay.
I would say waiver him. I still think it's Elijah Mitchell.
Good luck with that. If Christian McCaffrey's calf doesn't cooperate, you're not getting waivers. Not getting waivers on a dude. Actually, you know what? Speaking of waivers, did they cut Elijah Mitchell after this? Because there are going to be some challenges in terms of, okay, you're keeping three quarterbacks, six wide receivers. You know, we know that Schrader's out. You know, Tim Patrick is out, but Garendo's back in. Then you got to worry about what the hell's going on with Hufanga. Do you keep four? Or do you try to slide through three and then keep Hufanga on PUP? I don't think they want to do that. Obviously, they're going to try to add on defensive line to be sure, maybe even offensive line at cut down day. You know, five linebackers or six is still in question. Like there's a lot of stuff. And I'm just thinking to myself, does this team need Elijah Mitchell?
He's very good when he's healthy.
Yeah, but that second part's kind of important. What's the old saying, Jake?
Yeah, but right now he's healthy.
Is he?
Yeah.
But is he?
I think so. I mean, as healthy
Elijah Mitchell?
As healthy as he's going to be. Yeah.
Has he practiced?
Back. Yeah, he's been back.
Oh, I missed him on Tuesday.
He's been back at practice this week.
I missed him. Straight up missed him.
So I'm just saying.
They couldn't even give him a rep?
I'm just saying it's something where it's like, if you've got him, you keep him because he's good. And then if he gets hurt, then you throw him on IR. And then maybe you say, okay, we're done with you now. But
they might have to cut a player that they could use. They might have to get funky.
I mean,
which, listen,
how many? I guess
it's going to prevent our man Tonjes from making it.
What? Here's my question. Here's the actual position I don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
What do they do at linebacker? Because people have talked about Tatum Bethune. I see the upside with him. He still looks like a rookie to me. I think that's a reason they'd want to keep him. Is to just say, all right, he's got something. It's going to take time.
I don't
time.
See a reason they can't get him to practice squad. He hasn't.
I don't either.
Flashed.
But Jalen Graham's also like missing tackles. So, but he's got good size. So it's like, out of Jalen Graham, Curtis Robinson, Flanagan, Fowles, and Bethune.
Well, like, and by the way, I think we have to toss D. Winters in. He kind of looked bad there.
No, he's on the team.
I know, but like, he's a lot closer. And listen, I'm not the biggest Campbell guy. And they're going to need somebody beyond him because at a certain point they're going to, I mean, you don't, I know that Nate Hackett won't do it in week one, but Kevin O'Connell, even with the shell of a football team he still has in Minnesota, is going to be looking at 59 and being like, oh baby, let's go cook this guy because he does not move well. Every play ends in a horse collar tackle. It's kind of a tough scene out there for the big fella who was once a truly elite player in this league. He is not that anymore. But like D. Winters did not look good today. He just didn't look good today. And I don't want to go too hard in on linebackers because they're not asked to do anything interesting or complex. It's all just drop back in coverage. And if they run, crash. Like, they're put in bad positions consistently. That won't be the case in the regular season. It just simply will not be. Everything is very vanilla and shelled in this defense in the preseason, and for good reason, because I fully expect them to get funky come regular season. If practice has been any indication, I hope I don't lose my credential over that statement. But honestly, I don't have an opinion on these linebackers. You can keep or cut any of them. That's, they're all pretty meh to me right now. And ultimately, that makes me think that they'll probably just stick with Flanagan Fowles because he's the meh they know. And Winters, Flanagan, that's Fowles, fair. Campbell, obviously Fred Warner, who is certainly not meh. And then I guess one more spot, Robinson. They put him on the podium. I don't know.
Checks about right.
I don't think they can justify keeping six, though.
No, I don't either. I think you keep five and you say, you know, whatever, we'll get at least one of these guys we cut to practice squad and see where that goes. Let me hype this up a little bit since this thing's winding down, this electric preseason game.
Tell me,
it was a good
happening.
First half, I will say. It was fun that they gave us that. And it's like a little upsetting that it's, what, another 2+ weeks till the first game?
That's okay. We got college football this weekend, baby. Tomorrow.
Here's what the 49ers need before week one. They need to sign Trent Williams. They need to sign Brandon Ayuk.
Why would they need to do that?
Because they want to make sure Brock Purdy doesn't die and that he has someone he can throw the ball to. That's important. Number two, on the defensive line, find a big boy. Find a gap-plugging nose tackle that gets cut by someone, because I don't feel like you have it on the roster now.
Can we dive into that?
Add a defensive end who can just hold up in the run game and be a human presence who can stand there and say, I understand when teams are trying to attack you with screens and I'm going to hold contain and be competent.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I think Sam Okwuonu can do that. I liked what I saw from him today. You've been all over him at practice. I think that as a depth piece, you could do a lot worse. And I was just really impressed by his rushes today. I have a hard time cutting him. I think they will, but I would have a hard time doing it. What happened?
Sorry, there's a graphic of Danny Gray on the screen.
Oh, remember when he was a thing?
No, I don't.
There's Cody Schrader.
He's got
there's
one career catch. And Tanner Mordecai behind the Nuge.
Go make yourself a team, Cody Schrader. I don't want to have to watch Canadian football.
Listen.
I love watching Canadian football, but I don't want to have to watch him in Canadian football.
Drake Nugent. He really, really struggles to anchor in the pass game, but in the run game, he is a hoss. He really gets off quick. And can move.
They'll be able to squat him. They'll be able to.
I think so.
Squat him. If they don't, that's a real loss because he should be the starting center for the 49ers next year. Full stop. I wanted to say something about defensive tackle. We got to see some Malik Collins today, sort of for the first time. And I was a bit surprised. I watched a lot of Malik Collins with the Houston Texans, and there was a bit more nuance is not the right term, versatility to his game that I saw with Houston, where he did some interesting stuff. He could hold his position, break off in the run game, obviously got into the backfield very well, and you go, oh, this is actually a pretty good all-around player. And again, it's preseason and it's vanilla scheme, but I was actually a little bit stunned. He still has that ability to get into the backfield. It's just the Javon Hargrave model again, though.
Sorry, Latu missed another block.
Okay, well, so Cam Latu's playing in the fucking fourth quarter of the third preseason game. If anyone thinks he's not getting cut, he's getting cut.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't be watching the game.
Yeah, you're being a sicko. That's degenerate behavior.
I just looked and I saw him turn around the wrong direction as somebody tackled the running back, Cody Schrader.
Regardless, I was a bit concerned about Malik Collins's performance today. And I don't want to put too much onto it. And I don't think he played poorly, but this one gap shit, I don't think it's going to work.
Can you expound on that for the listeners at home? Are you talking Chris Kasurek, hyper aggression of the defensive line?
So their entire scheme is predicated on explosion off the line and penetration into the backfield. And at face value, that sounds good. If you're in the backfield, you should be able to make contact with a running back or a quarterback in the backfield. And those are big time plays. The issue is that you can get caught out by gap scheme blocking on the offensive line, traps and drags and all this stuff. And beyond that, there are really good running backs in the NFL these days who are able to maneuver in the backfield at levels that only Barry Sanders could do in the past. And what we've seen now time and time again this preseason is the 49ers just shooting the gap. Everything is about shooting the gap. There's a space, go between the space. And what's happened is opposing teams are running into the spaces that are vacated because the gaps that are being protected are more than the gaps that are being filled. And Fred Warner cleans up a lot of that. So again, I don't want to go just too deep into it, but man, this was an issue for the 49ers last year.
Let me say something about that.
Yeah.
In the Lions game, I pointed that out when I was previewing it. I was like, they're going to demolish the 49ers in the run game. They're just going to gap them and double team and get to the second level. As coaches say, out physical them. And I pointed that out and a guy went, oh, the run game doesn't matter. The running game doesn't matter.
He said that before a playoff football game.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, he's like, well, you know, you only score by throwing the ball. And I was like, listen, I know it's cool to shit on running the running game as like a negative EV play.
Is this a 49ers fan who said this?
Yeah.
And it's not the reality of the 2019 NFC playoffs.
Did Tanner Mordecai just tush push?
Well, all I know is this, Drake Nugent is, making believers of many folks out there.
But to go
none
back to
more
point,
so than ourselves, the original Drake Nugent believers.
That's right. The point is that, and the Lions exposed the hell out of him, man.
They did expose the shit out of him.
They just,
it was an issue well before the Arizona Cardinals exposed the shit out of him earlier in the season. And every team that played once Eric Armstead's foot went, bleh, they were just the one gap stuff. I'm not arguing that it's not a solid foundation, but you need to have a bit more complexity because offensive lines, particularly late in the season, when there's some cohesion and understanding, these offensive lines, now they have the tape on you. They can counter it. Even in the worst offensive line era, perhaps in the history of football, with the way that guys are coming out of college where, you know, you look at, we've talked about this a million times with Jarrett Kingston coming out of USC. I mean, they're just not even getting coached. It's embarrassing stuff that's happening at the college level, and it's proliferated every level of the game, save for Jim Harbaugh's Michigan. And so you have these guys who are coming in just raw. They're just bodies that have never been asked to play the position with any nuance or complexity. And now they're getting tossed into the NFL where you're going up against world-class athletes. I mean, just you want to talk about like the best athletes on the field? An elite level defensive end is one of the scariest humans on the planet.
Oh yeah.
A defensive tackle. That can, yeah, don't start me. And then a defensive tackle who can do what like an Aaron, like just think about Aaron Donald. And I know it's an extreme example, but Aaron Donald, while seemingly a nice guy, is an absolutely terrifying concept of a human being.
Oh yeah.
He's 300 pounds. He's as wide and deep as he is tall, and he can pick you up and throw you 10 feet in the air. Like
genuinely.
And he has such burst off the line that he can probably run the 100 meters in like 10.5 seconds.
I mean, did you remember the Geno Smith clip where Geno Smith
saw
Aaron Donald on block? this is an NFL quarterback who is like once like a star in college who's just like,
he's seen it all. Geno Smith has seen it all.
Been in the league for a decade. And Aaron he saw his Donald, life flash before his eyes.
Aaron Donald's coming towards him, and he yells out in practice, oh, fuck! Just throws it away. And I would, dude, one of the absolute perks of our job is that we get to see the speed and physicality of the, we almost get numb to it. The speed and physicality of NFL players, you might have seen a high school game. You might have even been lucky enough to see, you know, low-level college games. I've been on the field for SEC championship, and this is not a flex. This is just, again, it's a perk of the job. I've been on the field for a Pac-12 championship game, a lot of SEC games, and I've been on the field for NFL practices, NFL preseason games, and even NFL games, not recently, but certainly in you know my professional career. And, man, it is physically jarring to watch it up close. Like, you get a little bit of PTSD after the game. It's like watching 100 car crashes in a row. You feel it in your chest. It rattles your spirit. You're getting nervous being around it. Think about the scampering that we do in practice when two guys who are slowing down are coming towards us on the sideline. And you're like, oh, fuck, we could die. There's little bit of that every time.
Again, which is why when I see people who are my size out there, I go, buddy, what the hell are you doing?
Jacob Cowing. And you're like, how? This doesn't make sense. And then eventually it doesn't, because they play 5 years in the NFL and that ain't good. But I am consistently flummoxed by the speed and physicality of the NFL. And when you talk about a defensive lineman at that weight and that speed and that strength, there's nothing like that on the planet, man. There's nothing like that on the absolute planet. I don't even remember the original point of this.
I think your point was probably about Trent Williams or something.
I would try to get the guy who can stop those guys in camp. Right. Let's stick with that. It is, yeah, I am consistently awed by how good these guys are. And the fact is that, you know, there's a lot of guys who are very physically imposing. Who not? It doesn't matter. If anyone remembers in the comments what the fuck I was talking about before I went on that tangent, let me know.
Who knows, man?
What else do we need to cover here? I mean,
that's what I was going to say. We got, I think we're at the 2 minute warning here of the preseason. The 49ers, by the way, the not confirmed, but the likelihood is that an order you can basically, NFL teams can either decide, all right, training camp is over, locker room is open, but you don't get to see practice, or we're going to keep practice open, but you don't get to talk to the players yet. And the likelihood is that the 49ers keep practice open, so we don't go in the locker room. Mm-hmm. And I think they can do that for like another week, and then it's the regular season.
That's the rumor.
And that's the rumor. So
why would they do that, Jake? Why would they do that?
God, Windhorse, such a legend.
Windhorse fingers.
I think probably because one, they don't want, well, actually one reason, just so players aren't asked about Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams every single day.
That's the reason. So maybe they should just sign those guys. And then everything will be hunky-dory.
I would be pretty surprised if it goes another full week and they don't sign at least one of them.
Yeah. I think everyone's expecting that Trent Williams gets signed. It's a pretty straightforward negotiation. You see what Tristan Wirfs got paid? Give me more. And the 49ers go, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, let's...
Yeah, oh, that's the other thing. Alex makes it.
Oh, well, let's go to Alex's point. Heaven forbid we haven't had enough points from Alex. But if Ayuk is still around, he would technically be available to the media in open locker rooms, right?
Technically, yes. But he wouldn't be.
No, he would. From what I saw,
he's also an injured player, so he could be in the training room. And they can do stuff with quote unquote injured players where you don't have to talk.
Yeah. Also, I don't think he's been to his locker yet.
Galaxy Brain thought, maybe he wants to talk.
Now that's Galaxy Brain. I'm going to make a point here, and I'm going to remember it this time. they took away Trent Williams' second locker.
Yes.
Malik Mustafa is currently sitting in Trent Williams' second
He's
locker.
He's scared, too.
I would be petrified. I'm wondering how that's going to go down if Trent Williams shows up. You'd be like, oh... the fuck is this? Do you think that's part of the contract negotiations?
I genuinely was about to say that. Do you think, another Galaxy Brain thought, they're saying, Trent, we actually don't have enough lockers to give you your own until after cuts. After cuts, we will give you a locker, your second locker back.
Yeah.
And we'll pay you all the money you want. But until then, we actually do need the space because it's training camp.
Yeah.
So Wednesday of this week. Tuesday.
I mean, I hope that it's open locker room by the time that happens so I can see Trent Williams pick Malik Mustafa up. And who's, by the way, it's getting a little cringy out there with some of the comments regardless. he's a ripped young man. I think be like, this is my locker. And just pick him up and just take him over to just wherever Cam Latu was. Here you go, little man. I do want to bring this point up. Let's bring it back, because Ayuk is still, as much as some people on the internet say they don't want to hear about Ayuk anymore, as much as you and I might be sick of the Ayuk thing, it's still the biggest story in football right now. It really is. Giannis, Dieter has said all summer Ayuk is expendable. Debo is not a wide receiver one or even a wide receiver two. Ayuk has played this perfectly and he'll get his reward. Okay, let's just go point by point here. I'm not going to disagree with your first point. If that's how it's been inferred, I can't disagree with it. He is expendable in the sense that all wide receivers at the market rate that is currently being set for quote unquote top level wide receivers are expendable. And I think that recent NFL history has proven this, that you should not pay top dollar to top wide receivers if you are also paying your quarterback. You can choose one or the other. You cannot have both. And if you do have both, you have a fucked roster, an absolutely fucked roster. Or you're the New Orleans Saints. Good luck with that. Number two, Debo is not a wide receiver one or a wide receiver two. I mean, you had a good point until you got to the second part of it. Debo isn't a wide receiver one. He's a Z receiver. He has a hard time against press coverage. We knew that. We saw it today in the preseason against a scrub. He couldn't get off of press coverage. That corner for the Raiders made a hell of a play. Credit to him. But that's on Debo, right? That's a basic dig route. That is a staple of the 49ers offense for a decade now. That is a staple of Debo Samuel's game, and he couldn't create enough separation on a basic dig route to beat a third stringer who then made a great play to create an interception. So he's not a wide receiver one. Debo Samuel's going to have a fucking monster year, though, and he's absolutely a wide receiver two.
Real quick, and as much as there's the thing of like, oh, Ayuk has all these pieces around him that are taking the focus off him, Debo's has either had Emmanuel Sanders. They had a trade for Emmanuel Sanders. Granted, it was, I think, Debo's second year. Maybe it's his rookie year. But they had to trade for Emmanuel Sanders. And then I think the next year, it was 2020 disaster. And then Ayuk came in. Maybe Ayuk was 2020. Yeah.
Well, and they had some real issues there, right? When Ayuk was in the doghouse or Ayuk hadn't figured it out, because they went all in on Brandon Ayuk, the concept, and it never actualized until the last two seasons. And in that period of time, you also had a very different quarterback, that should be noted, who couldn't throw it to the outside to Brandon Ayuk, even if he wanted to, which he didn't. And so Debo Samuel was not just the focal point of the offense, but at points he was the entire fucking, they made the plane out of Debo Samuel. And it took him to an NFC championship game. It was incredible to watch. But they started 3-5, and then they said, how can we kill Debo for the rest of the season? And Debo said, I cannot die. And it was really an incredible season, and he deserves all the money he's gotten since then. What happened?
No question. And again, as much as like I will criticize Debo rightly for being unable to separate from press and running basically three routes, he's still like one of my favorite players of all time just to watch. Like no one can do what he does. No one is built like him. Also, his contested catch, like he can,
it's a great catch.
Like he's just a baller. But as a pure wide receiver, he's not.
No, but you know what? The other thing that needs to be noted in this is that he plays for Kyle Shanahan, and Kyle Shanahan's entire thing is that he can create separation for wide receivers via scheme. That's his thing. Now, it becomes an issue when you play consistent, aggressive press coverage in a game, specifically in a game where press coverage is not penalized the same way that it would be today in a regular season game where they're a little bit more flag happy. In the Super Bowl, there's so much, in the playoffs, and certainly in the Super Bowl, there's so much attention on the flow of the game and, oh, the refs are ruining the playoffs. And this is why the Seattle Seahawks continuously had success, because they would just start with pass interference on the first play, and then the second play, and the third play. They'd be holding within 5 yards, and they would dare the ref. They would normalize penalties, and they would dare the refs to throw a flag. All credit to the Kansas City Chiefs. They had the players to do it. They had the coaching to do it, and they normalized holding off the line of scrimmage. This is not an excuse for why the 49ers lost that game. The 49ers had every opportunity to do the exact same thing, and they didn't. The fact of the matter is they understood to slow down Deebo Samuel, you got to get up in his grill from the jump because he is not a twitchy athlete. He's just a supreme football player. There is a difference. The greats have both. Deebo Samuel has never been considered one of those all-time greats, right? He is Hall of very good football player, one of the funnest football players that you'll ever see play. His 2021 season is as good as anyone has ever played for a 10-12 week stretch. No one is going to take away Deebo Samuel's ceiling, but he is not a player without warts in the same way that maybe a Justin Jefferson might be, or whomever the new flavor of the week is. Certainly a Tyreek Hill is a player without warts. So what are we watching?
Watching the Raiders drive and like an insane one-handed catch over the middle that he almost certainly didn't catch.
I have a feeling the Raiders are going to be really, really bad this year.
100%. Wait, well, you have to see this catch. For those listening, Samuel Womack, decent coverage, one-hander over the middle.
That's not on Womack there.
No, that's the thing.
I think that guy caught it.
No, he did. They said he did. Number 82, Keaton. Now. Michael Keaton.
Doesn't matter.
He's a player. I'm Batman. Is he a player? Who knows? We're sick. There's 35 seconds left in the final preseason game.
Oh, and it's my man, Okwonu.
Okwonu?
Okwonu.
Oh, bull rush into his lap. I'm telling you, man, there's something there.
There's something there.
And there's a reason. Here's the thing. They didn't cut him when he was out for like a week, which is like, they needed defensive ends, and they did not cut him.
Yeah.
They easily could have, and with most guys who are just duds, you do. But they kept him around, so.
Imagine Giannis coming back in on the Deebo thing, apparently, and not taking a good thing and running with it. Deebo runs one route. Yeah, and he's gone for thousands of yards with it. You could do worse. You could do a whole lot worse.
I'd argue he runs like three.
Okay. Okay. They're all pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Are they getting 5 yards?
Field goal to tie the game?
No. Well, there's no overtime
preseason. But like, go for it on 4th and 15, you coward.
Antonio Pierce actually is trying to get back all the money he lost in those car dealership situations by betting the bejesus out of this game. And he had the tie, which I'm sure would have given him really good odds.
Listen, the 49ers have 3 timeouts in 16 seconds.
I'm alleging match fixing.
And a kickoff.
There is no OT in overtime. So there's no
issue.
I'm just saying,
you got 16 seconds in this kickoff.
I don't know what they keep cutting to Kyle Shanahan like he has something to do with this. He's not doing anything.
Yeah.
Kyle has as much influence on this game as we do. We also have headsets and a microphone. At least we're using ours. I mean, Kyle's just hanging out.
That's right. You have anything else you want to add about this illustrious preseason with 16 seconds to go?
I'm not sure that all of my fears about this team have been quelled by today. Not that they could have been, but like, this team really does feel like it has 9 wins written all over it right now. That's like a low point. I don't think the bottom's going to fall out or anything. But this team's currently set at 11.5, and I've just never felt stronger about pounding the under on something in my life. I think that their schedule is a bear. I think that any slip-ups at the beginning are going to loom large late. I just look at what happens once the calendar flips to October. They get that game against New England in week 4, and that's the last cupcake game they're going to get for the remainder of the season, because I'm bullish on Arizona, and I think that Chicago by week 14, leave the Caleb Williams out of it. Chicago's defense has a chance to be really special this year. You want to give me a play-by-play on what's happening?
So Carlson, you know, being a loser, kicked it deep into the end zone. So I think it's going to start at 30. And will Kyle have the guts to air it out with 16 seconds? I guess it's not Kyle. It's Clay Kubiak.
Clay Kubiak should put Danny Gray on the field. They're going to one miraculous it. Play.
They're going to kneel on it, and I think that's a mistake. I think you should, yeah.
No, they're just going for it. Okay, so out wide, I have no idea who that player is. Is that Tay Martin?
Is that John Shea Kirkland? Tay Martin, Mason Plyne, and Trent Taylor.
Oh, my God, Trent Taylor dropped it. That's unacceptable.
Launch it.
That's unacceptable. Well, I don't think
Mordecai made a hell of a play. Trent
was a hell of a throw. That's what I'm saying. I'm a little bit ahead of you here.
That actually would have had a chance to catch it, timeout, very quick out. Are they going to get a pass interference deep down the field?
Who the fuck knows? Flag. They throw in a flag for throwing it to Trent Taylor in that situation. It's called an illegal procedure. Bad coaching.
Personal foul defense.
What?
Did he rough the passer?
No, they're saying 53 who came in on that play.
Oh, he did. He did almost murder Trent Taylor, I will say.
But the ball bounced off of Trent Taylor's hands. That's not on. That's
yeah, you shouldn't. You shouldn't really get to call a penalty when a guy drops that pass. So
let's see how big Tanner Mordecai's arm is here.
Yeah, for those of you listening, 49ers are at the 45, their own 45 yard line with 7 seconds to go.
You're about to see it.
Three timeouts.
This is egregious.
That is awesome.
Yeah, let's see how far Tanner Mordecai can throw it. 1 yard. He can throw it 1 yard.
There's 1 second left.
Oh, my. The drama, the excitement, the absolute depravity of this moment,
Jake. You have to just throw it. Like, you can't go this far and then just kneel on it.
I do want to mention one guy. Chris Hubbard is his name?
Chris Hubbard, 61.
He's not making the team. There had been some suggestion that he could make the team. He's not making the team. Okay, Tanner Mordecai, can he get it deep enough? No.
Are they going to run goalpost?
Whoa! Hey now. This is weird.
Oh, my God.
It's all happening. The ball is still alive, Hutch.
Oh.
It's still alive. This might be the greatest play in the history of the NFL. No!
Tanner! Oh, my God. Go.
You can't
go.
Throw it. Oh, he threw it forward. Come on.
Well, flag.
Where's the flag? He threw it forward. Doesn't matter. Anything that happens does not matter.
Tanner Mordecai ruined what was an excellent play.
There were that roughly was so seven cool. laterals.
Oh, my God. Number 60, Gutierrez. Dude, Gutierrez just saw. There's no way one of those offensive linemen did not just injure themselves. That was incredible. Shanahan's laughing his ass off.
He should. You know what? That was the most entertaining play of the game.
That was fucking hilarious.
Brock Purdy had two elite level throws that got me excited for 49ers football.
Can we?
And
do
that was somehow the best play of the game. I'm going to rewind it. We're going to do a play by play here.
Genuinely. Unironically, we are going, Dieter, we are going to take this play, we're going to rewind it, and we're going to do like a mini film breakdown. And this is going to end the podcast, and I'm going to cut this up as its own clip, because this is the most entertaining thing I've seen in.
Okay, so let's establish first and foremost that the 49ers at this juncture, and maybe we'll intersplice this after the fact. I don't want to get copyright hit right now. The 49ers are at, I believe, the 45. Yes, their own 45-yard line. There's 1 second left. It's 24-24. 7 seconds left. I apologize. Or maybe I'm a play in front.
You're play behind. Trent Taylor gets roughed up. And then
it's 1 second and 45-yard line. They throw it deep. There's a mass of humanity. The Raiders get their hands on it first, okay? And this is at roughly the 6-7-yard line.
Yeah, Trent Taylor comes down with it at the 10.
The and ball then, bounces like, back scrum. To Trent Taylor.
Yeah, it bounces off a Raider around the 6-yard line, bounces into Trent Taylor's hands around the 10.
Now,
Trent Taylor, like a rugby scrum, just drops it out the back.
Right. Okay. So now Trent Taylor has it. There is nothing but open field to the left. Trent Taylor decides to go right into a mass of humanity. Good choice there. And I mean that sarcastically. He is now being tackled by three different Raiders and Mason Plein, who has somehow got caught up in the matter. Tay Martin is standing there wondering what the hell comes next. Very rugby scrum-like. Now, Trent Taylor has the wherewithal, maybe he's down, maybe he's not, to throw the ball straight into the air.
I don't know how he even gets rid of it, to be honest. He's getting tackled by four players.
Ronnie Bell is supposed to be the recipient of this throw into the air. He's back at the 10-yard line. So we've made negative progress at this point from where the ball was received. Ronnie Bell, doesn't catch it.
Ronnie Bell doesn't get it. He sort of like deftly sort of kind of kicks it. sort of bats it back.
It just keeps rolling.
And Gutierrez, Sebastian Gutierrez, number 60, who's going to come back into this play.
Yes, with his ass facing the end zone he's trying to reach. Gutierrez picks up the ball at the 14-yard line. He is then immediately tackled, but I think the ball was never actually recovered. And somehow Correct. Ronnie Bell has found himself in position at the 15-yard line to recover the fumble. Now, get this. Ronnie Bell turns into the mass of humanity.
He now, cuts right, and then he stops and cuts left.
He goes right into 53, the guy who just got a personal foul penalty for roughing a player. He runs right into him. He gets the living shit hit out of him as he throws the ball backward to Cody Schrader, who now has the ball at the 22-yard line. We're going the wrong direction, folks.
We're going back so quickly.
Cody Schrader, of course, being the legend he is, makes a guy miss. Now, he's got Gutierrez out in front of him, and for some reason, he decides, I'm going to throw the ball to Tanner Mordecai, who is for some reason in the play now. Tanner Mordecai does not receive the pitch. He fumbles it. Now they are at the 25-yard line. Again, going backwards. Tanner Mordecai has it. His ass is facing the end zone he's supposed to be going to. He rolls out to the right. He is now at the 32-yard line. Again, wrong direction. At the 32-yard line, he looks as if he's bootlegged to the right and is going to try to throw it into the end zone. At some point, Tanner Mordecai in this process thinks to himself, actually, I have to throw it backwards. He fails to do so.
Dieter, here's the thing. He doesn't throw.
Then he gets hit in the spleen.
He gets hit so hard. He tries to throw it sideways. In reality, he kind of almost does throw it sideways. It's a forward pass, but barely. And Schrader ends up with the ball now at the 34-yard line.
He catches it. I think he caught it at the 32, though. So it was a forward pass.
Yes.
But Bill Vinovich has left the game. So no one's throwing a flag. We got replacement refs on the field.
Correct. Bill Vinovich, the head referee, has been on the sidelines for like the entire second half.
He's wearing an NFL jacket like he's Rob Lowe. So now Cody Schrader has the ball on the sideline. Jake, you want to take it from here?
Yeah, Cody Schrader, he gets it at the 32, sort of bounces back to recover.
Momentum
gets it at the 34. Number 36 for the Raiders just like is gassed. Cody Schrader walks around him. Now he's hauling. He's hauling down the sideline. He cuts back.
At the 20.
Yeah, he's at the 20. He's getting tackled. As he's going down, he somehow flips it out, fumbles it. It goes to Sebastian Gutierrez. Remember, number 60, who's all the way on the right side of the field.
Who's got it twice now.
Kickstarted this play, the middle of this play. Now, like Robert Hunt of the Miami Dolphins, seen everything that he's ever imagined. This giant offensive lineman who's never had a moment of glory. Right now, he sees number 40, who's standing flat-footed, and he says, I'm going to run through this man's ass. He gets the ball. He's powering through. 40 throws a hand. He doesn't want any part of this. Gutierrez, at this point, looks like a running back from the 1920s. Just an overweight monster who's, like, going to run for 800 yards.
It's Mike
and
Ditka
fumble
in his prime.
100%. He is now throwing a stiff arm at number 91. He's carrying the ball in his left arm like a running back. He looks glorious.
It's incredible. This is the best play of his professional career. He's at the 10-yard line.
Yeah,
he can see the end zone. He's got one man to beat.
Yeah, he starts at like the 20. He gets past 40. Now he's at like the 6 with 91 eating it. He stiff arms 91 into the goddamn dirt.
Yep.
You got number 42 who's chasing him from behind, but 91. 91. Right at the 5, catches his heel. Glory, it's over. It's over. He tries to fumble it again and throw it out. He's down. The glory is dead. But man, I mean, I honestly, that is one of the most entertaining plays I've genuinely ever seen in my entire life. I think Sebastian Gutierrez, who's, by the way, at the end of this play, lying down with his head to the sky.
Poor Kay. Okay.
It's fucking incredible.
That was,
and then yeah,
that was something.
Yeah,
that
and then Jared something. Kingston. By the way, the ball comes out. It's too late.
In.
He tries to roll it in. Kyle Shanahan is beaming even wider than we are. I mean,
Gutierrez just giving it. I almost had it, you guys. I almost had it. He is so gassed.
I cannot wait to ask about that play.
Pooney's coming up to him, being like, "You almost had it, man." That will be the only play from this game that is ever shown again. That was spectacular. And sometimes we wonder, why we bother doing this. That's why.
That was honestly, I feel like I found God. That was incredible.
Remember when Dontari Poe used to do the jump passes for the Chiefs before they had Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that kind
pretty
of
close.
Feeling.
I think we should end on that note. I think that's a glorious way to end it.
I love big men doing little man things, and I love little men doing big men things on a football field.
They don't get enough appreciation. They don't.
No. No. And neither do we, but we're going to leave that where it is. Thanks to all the sickos who joined us. Love the back and forth. We'll do it again. We got nothing but time between now and September 9th. So we'll find a way to fill it. At some point, they might sign some contracts. I'll tell you one thing, though, maybe. Jake. We're going to be talking on cutdown day. Buddy.
That's right.
Y'all haven't seen a roster breakdown like the one we're going to be delivering on cutdown day.
Genuinely.
And we'll probably do a 53-man breakdown before then.
Oh, but, yeah.
In the meantime, stay sick, everybody.
Stay sick.